for, then released the capsule. At the extreme range of its sensors, Faraday saw that the predators who had attacked it had now reformed into a group and were heading in the same direction as they had been before they broke off to attack. Their speed was much higher than before. If a computer could be surprised, Faraday's central processor would have whistled with astonishment.
Control Center. Linda Vishnevskaya twitched with surprise. She sat at her console in the control center, alone except for the forlorn figure of Max Jaeger, dozing in one of the visitors' chairs up by the curving bulkhead. The rest of her crew were not needed. No data capsule from Faraday was expected for another 12 hours. She could have left the center completely unattended. If anything happened, the comm system would automatically alert her. But she sat stubbornly for hours at the console, knowing that nothing was going to happen, but unwilling to take the chance that an emergency might arise that would need her immediate attention. Jaeger hovered around the consoles endlessly, taking only brief breaks. He even brought trays of food in, littering the area where he sat with crumbs and emptied cartons. Vishnevskaya at least had the good sense to take an hour for each mealtime and go to the galley before she hurried back to her console. She was half drowsing when the message light began flashing and the audio pinged. Startled, she saw the main screen automatically power itself aglow and a list of alphanumerics began scrolling across it. A data capsule, unscheduled. Vishnevskaya realized something unusual must have happened down in that deep, dark ocean of Jupiter. She started to turn to shout the news to Jaeger, but saw that the burly engineer was already standing at her shoulder, peering intently at the symbols flashing across the screen. "What's gone wrong?" he demanded, his voice hoarse, growling.
Andy Corvus was swimming with the dolphins again. The aquarium was big, filled with fish that everybody said were bright and colorful, but to Andy they were merely varying shades of gray, and the sleek, grinning dolphins chattering to each other. The translator built into Andy's face mask picked up only a few words. Squid below, warmer, fast current. Baby was growing fast, he realized. He almost failed to recognize her as the young dolphin glided up toward him. "Hello, Andy." "Hello, baby," he said, happy that she was speaking to him. "Race?" Andy shook his head, not an easy thing to do in the water with a breathing mask. "You always win. You're too fast for me." Something like mirth seemed to emanate from baby's whistling reply. The translator told him, "You're slow, Andy." "I do the best I can." "Two legs not good." Andy thought for a moment, then replied, "My two legs work fine on land." Now baby fell silent. Andy watched her circle around him, then go up to the surface for a gulp of air. When she came back, she said, "Water better. No fish on land."
Deirdre watched the display screen as the enlarged image of a Volvox aureus colony swam busily through a drop of simulated pond water. She had worked very hard to alter the purified water of Station Gold's drinking supply into the rich brew of pond scum that tiny Volvox thrived in. The microscopically small green sphere was in the process of reproducing. Deirdre watched, fascinated as always, while the creature's cells began to fission, splitting into specialized gonadal cells, male and female. "No privacy for you," she thought. It seemed silly to be studying these microscopic algae in hopes of learning more about the gigantic leviathans. Then she remembered that Dr. Archer had also asked her to look at the images that the leviathans displayed on their mammoth flanks. Pictures, Deirdre thought. He believes the leviathans communicate through pictures, and he wants me to interpret them for him. With a resolute shake of her head, she told herself, "It's crazy. He's grasping at straws, just like he said." Looking back at the screen's display of the reproducing Volvox, she thought, "We're all grasping at straws. Like the blind man and the elephant, we don't really have the faintest idea of what we're dealing with. But I promised him I'd look into the imagery and see if I can make any sense of it. I'll have to fit that in somehow. When I'm not talking with Andy's dolphins or studying these little buggers." The new cells were faithfully arranging themselves into another colony, but as usual, the cilia that propelled the colony through the water were on the inside of the newly created sphere. Deirdre leaned forward intently, watching as the spherical creature dutifully turned itself inside out, and the cilia began chugging away, moving the newcomer out of the microscope's field of view. Turning to the smaller readout screen beneath the main display, Deirdre saw that the sensors had acquired the data she needed, a detailed list of the chemicals that flooded the interior of the colony's tiny sphere. Those chemicals were what triggered the reproductive phase, she knew. They guided the tiny creature's creation of a new version of itself, the microbial analog of the pheromones that trigger human reproduction. "Gotcha," she murmured with a satisfied smile. The galley was crowded when Deirdre arrived, but none of her usual friends was in sight. She picked up a tray and took a salad and a mug of fruit juice, then found a table for herself. Before she could sit down, though, she saw Andy Corvus enter the galley, looking glum despite the garish orange slacks and emerald-green pullover he was wearing. She waved to him and waited while he packed his tray with a vegetarian lunch and sauntered over to her. "How's it going?" Deirdre asked as Andy sat down. He made a loose-jointed shrug. "Baby talks to me, but I'm not getting any new information, really. Not adding to the vocabulary." "Maybe there's nothing more to get," she said. "Maybe you've got their entire language down." "I'd hate to think that." "They're smart, Dee. They must have more in their minds than just fish and water temperatures." She said nothing, stuck a fork into her salad. Corvus's phone jangled. Frowning, he pulled it from his shirt pocket. "Mrs. Corvus?"
"Yes?" "Yes, I did."
"Uh-huh." Suddenly, his eyes lit up.
"You did? And the record shows it? No doubt about it?"
"Wow." He positively beamed at Deirdre.
"Okay, thanks. Thanks a lot."
"Good news," Deirdre guessed. "The report from Scripps in California just came in. Baby's mother was culled from the Pacific Ocean by a research team when she was practically a newborn, younger than baby is now." "And?" Deirdre prodded. "They pulled her out of the ocean because sharks were attacking her pod. One of the other young females had already been killed."
"Her sister,"
Deirdre said.
"Just like she told you."
Corvus was almost bouncing up and down on the chair in his enthusiasm.
"Just like she told you, that's the confirmation that we need. You made real contact with Baby and the rest of the dolphins."
Corvus jumped to his feet.
"You know what this means?"
Before Deirdre could reply, he went on, "This means you really did make meaningful contact, Dee. We can prove it now." Deirdre had never seen a grown man look so excited. People at other tables were turning toward Corvus, staring. She half expected Andy to jump up on their table and dance a jig.
In the control center, Max Yeager was eagerly leaning over Vishnevskaya's shoulder, staring at the multiple screens on her console. "The bastards are slamming into her," he growled.
"No damage," Vishnevskaya muttered.
The display screens showed Faraday's sensor views of the predators and the reading of the internal monitors as one by one the big shark-like creatures banged into the vessel.
"No damage," Vishnevskaya repeated each time one of the beasts attacked.
Yeager felt each lurch as a punch in his gut.